The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neo-colonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. One might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
You are listening to The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part documentary series about the destructive impact of U.S. imperialism on the continent. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
Voices and sounds in this series were recorded at the 2007 World Social Forum, held in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is Militarizing Africa, the opening episode in our series. For the next half hour, we focus on the wars in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Somalia. Stay tuned. Nearly 80% of the strategic minerals the United States requires are found in Africa, including 90% of the world's cobalt, 90% of the platinum, 40% of the gold, 98% of the chromium, 64% of the manganese, and one-third of the uranium. These minerals are needed to make jet engines, cars, missiles, electronic components, iron, and steel. No industrial society can exist without these substances. Africa also accounts for 18% of U.S. oil imports, a number which is expected to rise.
Africa is the most war-torn region in the world, with armed conflicts going on in 9 countries: Democratic Republic of the Congo, Sudan, Ethiopia with Somalia, civil war in Ethiopia, Uganda, Chad, Nigeria, Morocco with Western Sahara, and Algeria. The U.S. has provided arms and military training to participants in all of these 9 wars. Washington has done the same in another 5 wars that ended during 2002 to 2006. These are the long civil wars in Angola, Sierra Leone, Burundi, and Liberia, as well as that in Congo-Brazzaville.
According to William Hartung, co-author of the report Deadly Legacy, U.S. Arms to Africa and the Congo War, the U.S. sent $1.5 billion in arms and training to Africa during the Cold War years, 1950 to 1989. This, quote, set the stage for the current round of conflicts in the region, unquote. He further points out that, quote, the military skills and equipment supplied by the United States are still being used by combatants in these wars, unquote.
Following the end of the Cold War, the Clinton administration undertook a wave of new military training programs in Africa. In the 1990s, the U.S. gave military assistance to 50 countries in Africa out of a total of 53. The U.S. has 4 different military training programs for Africa.
Since 2001, the Bush administration has doubled U.S. military aid to Africa and quadrupled U.S. arms transfers. In February 2007, Bush set up a new Pentagon command for Africa called AFRICOM. It is headquartered at the huge U.S. military base at Djibouti in the Horn of Africa, close to Saudi Arabia and Yemen. The base houses 2,000 U.S. troops, mainly special forces, as well as CIA operatives. Given its strategic location, AFRICOM's purpose appears to be control of African and Middle Eastern oil.
The most destructive case of U.S. military intervention in Africa is the war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the heart of the continent. The war has killed more than 4 million people since 1998 and destroyed the second largest country in Africa. The Congo is the richest country in the continent, holding the world's biggest copper, cobalt, and cadmium deposits. The U.S.'s proxies for this genocide are Rwanda and Uganda, which started the war in 1998 by invading the Congo with Washington's encouragement and support, and have since been looting the country's resources and sending them to the West. Oxfam called this war the world's biggest humanitarian disaster.
Angola, Zimbabwe, and Namibia sent their armies to support the Congo government, and Burundi joined the other side. Thus began Africa's first world war, involving seven armies, which has further wrecked a country crushed by more than a century of Western domination. The U.S. has given arms and military training to all seven armies.
Rwanda and Uganda are the U.S.'s staunchest allies in the region, and Washington backed the invasion of the Congo, according to Human Rights Watch. Uganda received $1.5 million in U.S. arms and military training in 1999. U.S. Special Forces have trained the Rwandan army in counterinsurgency, combat, and psychological operations. This included instructions about fighting in the Congo. To keep the war going, the U.S. has helped the other side too, with Zimbabwe getting $1.4 million in U.S. military training in 2000 and Namibia $500,000.
Mfuni Kazadi is from the Congo and is Secretary General of the group Coalition for the Cancellation of the Illegitimate Deaths of the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
And when the war started, they were ships of American at Mwanda. I tell you, it is confirmed by the Angolese. And that ships, its mission was to gather all the communication for Uganda's and Rwanda's army, which were in Mwanda and Kitona. You see, so it is confirmed. And also, when the war were going on, the American were part of the problem, because their authorities said that the Congo is too big, must be divided into four states. If the Congolese, if they can't find any solution to the war, so the Congo must be divided. So the resistance of people, that is why the resistance of people have caused 4 and 2 million people dead. So you see now, the Rwandese were used like a puppet. They put them in face to fight for the interests of the United States.
Under a peace deal signed in 2002, Rwanda and Uganda formally withdrew their forces from the Congo. But fighting continues in the eastern part of the country, with Rwanda and Uganda using proxy forces to control territory and continue the looting. The United Nations has identified 85 foreign multinational corporations based in the US, Europe, and South Africa that have been looting the resources of the Congo as the war has raged. Those include the big diamond company, De Beers, the mining giant, Anglo American, Barclays Bank, Bayer AG, Cabot Corporation, and the Canadian mining companies, Barrick Gold and Banro.
In an example of organized crime, many companies have funded military operations, thus perpetuating the war. The Congo War is a horrifying example of all three instruments used by the U.S. in its attempt to dominate Africa: military invasion, World Bank, IMF, economic control, and Western corporate plunder.
All the looting material have been transferred, have been exported to the United States for nothing, you see. So the Congolese have lost everything. And there was only The Hague last year who condemned Uganda to pay $10 billion. But they said, we have no power to oblige Uganda to pay that amount. So that we say, if they have condemned Uganda, Rwanda should be also condemned, because they were a party of the invasion. Why Rwanda should get away from that tribunal?
The Congo War has displaced more than 3 million people, forcing many of them to flee to other countries. Women have been particularly affected by the war. Rape has been used so widely as a weapon in the war that doctors cannot believe its extent. It's estimated that 250,000 women have been raped by combatants, the victims ranging from a 2-year-old to a 70-year-old. About 1/3 of rape victims have contracted HIV and AIDS. Millicent Okumu is secretary of the Federation of Congolese Abroad, an international organization with branches in the Congo and 11 other countries that provides resettlement services to expatriate Congolese. The Federation also contributes to reconstruction efforts inside the Congo, including raising funds for hospital supplies.
The burden on the war falls on a woman, because a woman is in charge of the children, is in charge of everything in the house, in the home. So when a woman cannot run away and leave the kids, you have to struggle that you protect your children. The women are the most suffering people. Many women and girls are victims of rape. So it is not something which is a secret. It's well known that women were so much raped, so much traumatized, so much that some of them are affected till now. If it was a girl, he can't allow himself to get involved with a man because of the trauma that she went through. When a woman is raped, maybe you don't know the man had HIV AIDS, you don't know the man has STDs. So if you are raped and you're being infected, now that life has been destroyed. Maybe you're having you got pregnant through that rape. That child will be traumatizing you, because this is a child that I got out of my will, out of my wish. Now, when you destroy a woman, you're destroying the community, you're destroying the family.
Since 2002, at Washington's insistence, the Congo has been subjected to a World Bank IMF structural adjustment program, which means that its economic policy is being set by these two U.S.-dominated institutions. A major effect of this policy is to legalize the corporate looting of the Congo. Under World Bank rules, foreign companies pay almost nothing to the government for lucrative mining concessions.
What the U.S. has done, they also say that you must work with IMF and World Bank. And when the World Bank came, they put in place reform, macroeconomic reform. They have made a new code of investment. In that code of investment, they are saying that if the investor comes, it is the right to repatriate the benefit.
So repatriate all the benefits?
All the benefits, 100%. All the benefits. So now we have lost a lot of mining, rich mining concession, for nothing. You understand? So, who gain? You find that all the company in the front, there are United States. You understand? So, this is a very, very systematic policy taken by the United States. Now, they have also made what we call code minier, mineral code. In mineral code, they said the investor can take up to 90% of shares. Up 90% of share and leave only 10% of share to the government. So it's not investment. We call it pseudo investment.
It's plunder.
It's blunder. Robbery. It's robbery. Robbery. Yeah. With what are we going to build the Congo as far as the multinational have taken everything?
The objective of the U.S. is to gain control of the economic riches of the Congo. To do this, Washington first used war and genocide, and then the World Bank and the IMF, combined with the threat of a return to a wider war.
The World Bank said, "This is the price of the peace. You should give up. You see, you should give up your company. You should give up your concession. This is the price you have to pay for the peace. We are like we are used like a slave. We are just producing. They give you a small amount of money, but all the benefits are taken by transforming the material outside. You understand? I would like to see a Congo where people are in the working. They produce, and not only producing the primary raw material, but also transform the material in place, so that they can sell and get more benefit. Because now, all what we are doing, we are just selling the gross product we gain, so there is no any benefit which came from that. All these raw material are being transformed outside. You understand?
Patrice Lumumba was the first elected leader of the Congo. He served in office for only 2 months. Because of his desire for economic independence, the U.S. had him assassinated in 1961. Washington replaced him with its puppet, Colonel Mobutu, a brutal military dictator who murdered thousands of Congolese and looted the country for 37 years in league with Western multinational corporations. Mobutu's reign continued the plunder and killing begun by Belgium, which colonized the Congo from 1885 to 1960. Lumumba is one of Africa's greatest heroes.
He was killed because of that. He was asking to give the independence, the economic independence. You see, that is the same policy now. If you raise your voice, you will be killed. That was the example to show to the Congolese that if you try to resist us, we are going to do the same as we did with Lumumba.
After 37 years of U.S.-imposed dictatorship and 8 years of a U.S.-backed genocidal war, the Congo is close to becoming the poorest country in the world, with 95% of its population unemployed and subject to chronic malnutrition. Yet it is worth noting that in spite of the catastrophe it has wrought in the Congo, the U.S. has not been able to achieve a major objective, that of balkanizing the country. Washington's military strategy has failed in the Congo because of the fierce resistance of the Congolese people.
The desire for mineral riches has led the U.S. to invade not just the Congo, but also Somalia in December 2006, this time using the Ethiopian army as proxy. Somalia possesses substantial deposits of petroleum and is strategically located close to Saudi Arabia. The invasion was coordinated and supported from the U.S. military base at Djibouti, which borders Somalia. U.S. Special Forces and CIA operatives at the base helped to design the invasion. U.S. planes and ships bombed Somalia during the invasion, and special forces accompanied the Ethiopian military into Somalia.
The Ethiopian army has been trained and armed by the United States, which is the main backer of Meles Zenawi, the country's murderous dictator. Washington plans to ensure that two-thirds of Somalia's oil fields are taken over by the American oil companies Conoco, Amoco, Chevron, and Phillips. The puppet Prime Minister of Somalia has proposed a new oil law to encourage the return of foreign oil companies to the country.
Ethiopian troops occupy Mogadishu, Somalia's capital, where fierce fighting continues between them and Somali resistance groups. The Ethiopian military has committed horrendous war crimes, killing thousands of civilians by shelling densely populated neighborhoods indiscriminately. As a result, 365,000 Somalis have fled the capital.
Farah Malam is chairman of Ford People, the third largest political party in the Kenyan parliament. He's a former member of parliament from Lagdera, which borders Somalia and is part of Kenya's northeastern province. Malam is both Kenyan and Somali, and an expert on U.S. policy towards Somalia and the Horn of Africa.
It is American invasion. Well, the U.S. role is everything. The Ethiopians were sent in by the Americans. We believe that. And they were too happy and too glad to do the dirty job for the Americans, do the errands for the Americans. So you could safely say that this is a genocide against the Somali people. So it's American helicopter gunships that literally pulverized them from, you know, so many kilometers away where they could not reach them. And that's basically what turned the tables of the war. And Ethiopian soldiers are there just to, you know, when the Americans do the damage from the sky, to, you know, finish off the rest. Basically, that's it. And to maintain a ground troops presence. From the sea, they're using missiles, you know, and American Marines who also, they land their boots also on the ground as often as they want.
To justify its invasion of Somalia, the U.S. claimed that it was looking for three terrorists. Halima Abdi Arush is Somali and chairperson of EDA, Women's Development Organization, a non-governmental organization based in Mogadishu.
سترتيب إن لو الراديو سدحن إن إذا ولا رادينا هنا إن كمانان لدي الحق معها.
While you're searching for three people, killing and bombing millions of people is not fair.
أنا هدي لله يدت كورن هاد الديار ده هدت كإلاين يا وح دعي صرت مريكن كوحي ربان إني دهان دت كواجوجين وأنا ليني لكن هدنا كدهان أي طور عيان dadka ay ku dhacaayaan oo dadka arooska qabay ama dadka guuraayay ama dad oo iska caadi aho wadankooda iska degan oo waliba rural area degan hadii lagu garaaco naceeb waxa imaanayo oo arintaas ay keenayso ay ka dhigi karto dadka noocyada iyaga ay raadinayaan.
This is what happened in the south of Somalia. The first day there was a big celebration of a wedding which was bombed. Many people from both families died. There were nomads who were moving from one area to another who also died. If these things happen, the people that they are searching for today, maybe they do not find them, but they can find them tomorrow because the survivors of that wedding, the brothers and sisters of the nomads that were killed, will become radical. They are starting to get angry against the Western countries, against the Americans, and they can be the base for terrorist groups.
As with the Congo, the US wants to divide Somalia into several smaller countries to make the oil easier to control.
There's this massive and enormous oil deposits that Somalia sits on, and that's what America wants. So what actually the American scheme on this is to balkanize Somalia, break it up into like five small mini states, just like the Gulf states, the Emirates, yeah, and each one of them to have a small clan or tribal ruler, as such that America now becomes the dominant power that can have a separate deal with each one of them, and have Ethiopia's military power on the other side to intimidate them all along, as such that they do not have any independence. Every clan can have a small oil field, which basically will be run by the Americans.
While it has tried unsuccessfully to destroy the Congo as a state, the U.S. has actually accomplished the same in the case of Somalia. Washington was the main force behind the disintegration of Somalia in 1990. During the 1980s, Somalia was the top recipient per capita of U.S. military and economic aid in Africa. Siad Barre, the country's dictator at the time, was a key strategic ally of Washington in the Cold War and got $600 million in U.S. aid. Following Barre's rampage of killing and plunder, Somalia literally fell apart. Barre's forces murdered 5,000 unarmed civilians in 1988-89, and in 1990, he was overthrown.
With no central government, Somalia descended into chaos and civil war. The U.S. backed one warlord after another for the next 16 years to foment war and division and prevent the emergence of a central authority. This fighting has killed 1 million Somalis out of a population of 8 million. U.S. forces invaded Somalia in 1992, but were defeated and humiliated by Somali resistance fighters. When during 2006, the Islamic Courts Union appeared close to forming a central government and ending the civil war, the U.S. unleashed the Ethiopian invasion.
Roolka kali ay ciyaareen waxay noqotay in ay nimanka warlordka ahay oo wadamada wadanka dhibaatada ku hayay kali inay kaalmeeyaan. Mar walba shacabka waa dareemayay inay jirto arintaas oo Mareykanka arrimaha ku jiro, waayihii hore waa inkiri jireen, markii dambena si toos ah u cadeysteen.
The only role of the Americans was to support these warlords who have brought all this chaos to the country. Americans used to deny this, but the Somali people were aware of their involvement, and in the end, the Americans made it clear themselves that they were doing this.
Markaas waxa dhacay dagaalo oo aan cidna loogu abaayeleynin oo xaafadaha xamar ka dhacay oo kumanaan qofood ay ku dhinteen waqtiga yar. Kadibna ay dhacday arintaas inay fursad u siiso qof la arko qofkii wax fahmay iyo ma aragtay dadkii lacagta qabay inay kaalmeeyaan dadka hor yimaada dadkaas وحانا أبورمي قرب كلو يقين ICU إسلامي كورتسكا أو ستك دك أقولستي.
There were chaos in Mogadishu. Thousands of people were killed. That's why the Islamic Courts Union was created, to stop the chaos.
Halima's husband and brother were killed in the civil war. Almost every Somali family has suffered similar losses.
So you could safely say that for the last 16 years, Somalia was maintained in the state it was in terms of disintegration of society and state and not having a center or a central government for that matter. The Ethiopian direct interference, as well as the Americans had a direct interest in Somalia, but using a proxy, Ethiopia, directly and militarily. I think they don't want a viable central power in Somalia. Not just strong, they don't want any viable central power in Somalia. The U.S. interest is, I'll tell you, the U.S. interest in blocking that is that Somalia is known to sit on massive deposits of minerals, oil, and other minerals too, including uranium. The Americans have tried for a very long time through their own companies to get concessions, but based on their own dictates from the former Somali dictator Siad Barre. You could say anything you want about Siad Barre, but he was a nationalist. So he never allowed an unfair deal between him and the Americans. He would say, if it takes 100 years later, well, let the sons and the daughters of the soil come out with the right technology and the right knowledge for them to exploit their own natural resources instead of you taking it cheaply from me now. Because there was a 70-30 kind of an arrangement that the Americans wanted, I think, through Conoco, which is an American oil company, and others. That's what I hear. But then he refused. He said, sorry, it has to be a fair deal, with more benefits going to the Somalis and less to the Americans. Well, the Americans supported Siad Barre, but later on again undermined him. So there is a very reliable information that most of the warlords who took up arms against Siad Barre also had the tacit support of the American center, supporting the warlords and basically going for this disintegration of the state and society. And the sad part of it is that it's militarizing a society that essentially is not a militaristic society. It has better priorities in life. It has different priorities. It has economic welfare, education, development as such, and other things.
You have been listening to Militarizing Africa, the first episode of the documentary series The Ravaging of Africa.
The Ravaging of Africa is dedicated to the memory of Patrice Lumumba.
This series was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. Go to www.asadismi.ws. That's www.asadismi.ws for more information or to download the series.
Translation by Maziar Mahajir at Toronto Conversation Corner and Farid Omar. Voiceover by Benedicta Madavo.
Theme music is Ner Balankina by Captain Yaba from Ghana.
On this episode, you also heard Mukaji by Papa Wemba from the Congo. This series was funded by Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903, QP National, Canadian Union of Postal Workers National, CUPW North Bay Local, Canadian Labour Congress, Public Service Alliance of Canada, Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Mining Watch Canada.
Thank you for listening.